This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. For that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider, a sports talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. It is NFL draft day. My Lions are going to make their Super Bowl picks today. I am ready for the NFL draft. I got my Amon-Ra St. Brown jersey. I just got to keep it crisp for tonight. This was before I knew he was going to be the highest paid receiver in the league. That's coming. I got to get on the phone with John St. Brown. We're going to get John St. Brown on the show next week. Looking forward to it. So if you can't tell, I'm super excited about the spring game from last week, the draft today, right? What my man Dusty May is doing in the portal. I don't know if Daniel Horton is in the chat. Daniel, you can't bring me down. My man Dusty's killing it. And I'm here to talk about it all with my crew from the MGo Blog Roundtable. Fellas, good morning. How are you? Starting with Brian Cook, how are you?
I'm well.
That is great. And my brother from another mother, Seth Fisher. See, I didn't even tell Seth it was going to be a Lions theme day. Oh, and showed up in a Lions jersey.
We got the text from the school that said they had to wear Honolulu blue to school today. But then the boy was not allowed to. He dressed up as a lion, and they told him he can't dress as a lion because they're actually going to the zoo today. So I don't know if that wasn't cool. But
and then Craig Ross, how are you this morning?
I'm growing a mustache and a mullet, getting a job at Chick-fil-A. That's it.
I don't get the reference.
Yeah, it's a line from a Ben Folds song.
Okay.
Our lines from Ben.
Well, guys, there's a lot of ground to cover, so I'm going to try to do it in succession. Going back to the spring game last week and just starting off with your biggest takeaways, of course, starting with the quarterback, Brian.
Well, I mean, it was not a day that really showcases what Alex Orju brings to the table because they had zero quarterback runs on the menu. And I thought Davis Warren looked pretty good. I thought Orju, you know, showed some limitations, but also showed that he has a strong arm and can hit some stuff underneath. And then it's about like designing the offense around the fact that he's going to need open guys downfield. I'm not entirely sure that Michigan is prepared to do that. And then, you know, I didn't think Denegal looked pretty good. I didn't think Jaden Davis looked that ready. So to me, it's like those two guys plus Tuttle is going to be the battle in the fall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agree. Yeah. I concur. Seth Fisher, what did you think?
Yeah, man, you put Alex Orju under center. When I went back and watched the tape, I was a little less enthused with Warren. I'm going down from like, you know, that was an A plus performance to that was like a B plus performance. I thought he was a little late on some of his reads. It's not crisp, but man, I've been so spoiled by JJ McCarthy. It's really hard to reset my expectations for what a quarterback is supposed to look like, because you know they're gonna throw it into people's chests sometimes, and it's gonna be. That happens. It's just, that didn't happen with JJ. So I was really impressed by some of the other guys. Tavier Dunlap actually looked really good, especially when I went back again and looked at it again. He was having a really good game. The tight ends are really awesome, but like Marlon Klein, you see that speed. And you saw how he had a feel for when to block. Now, the problem is they're not going to be going against walk-ons wearing number 31. So mm-hmm. When you're up against real safeties, it might look different. But like Deacon Tonielli put a guy to the ground and made an impressive catch. Bredesen had a good catch. So, I mean, those are the kinds of things that I was watching in the second round. And I'm a little bit more comfortable with the tight end room. And the running back room is just stacked. Quarterback, it's everyone's going to talk about quarterback.
Yeah. Well, as usual for me, I sat in the end zone because I like to see what the middle of the line play looks like. For the second year in a row, I came away looking at Raheem Anderson and thinking this guy can really play. I went back and I've been through three quarters of the tape, and I said, well, who was Raheem Anderson blocking? Well, he was blocking Kenneth Grant.
For like five snaps.
Right. But they were five primo snaps for him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I came away heartened. Also, this may be more long-term. He was playing next to a guy who was recruited as a center, I think. His name is Guanera.
Yeah, Guanera.
He played really well at right guard. And so I came away thinking, okay, if the offensive line is really good, I'm a lot less concerned about quarterback because they'll work something out there. I mean, there's enough talent there. It seems like there's enough ability there if the offensive line is good. And I came away thinking the middle of the offensive line is probably going to be pretty good, center and guard. I'm just unclear about tackle. Now, Hinton didn't play, but when I go back over and over the summer and look through the tape again, maybe I'll have different impressions. I don't know if anyone else said or saw anything about the offensive tackle spot, but that was the one that gave me some pause.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting that they had Percy at guard. So that was supposed to be the battle. It was going to be Gentry versus Percy. Now Gentry was moving people and he also just didn't know where some guy, he got disorganized on a couple blitzes. So I think it was an up and down game. I get why Sam was talking before the spring game about, like, you know, they might want to go and find another tackle who might compete with these guys. Now you're still hoping Andrew Gentry wins out, but I can see why you want somebody who's just, you know, doesn't have that kind of power, but is not going to make that many mistakes. Percy, if he's inside, I don't know what we're doing.
Yeah. I don't think you should read too much into that. I mean, they had a draft.
Uh-huh.
And so all the line combinations were mixed up, and the battle is between Andrew Gentry and Jeff Percy. But if you're Michigan and you're competing for a title, if you can help it, you want to fortify that competition with some experience that you think is starter capable.
Yeah.
Now, if those guys beat him out, great.
Right.
That's awesome. But I'm not, if you can fix the experience, the lack of experience at that spot, you got to do it.
Oh, yeah.
You absolutely have to do it. And then you explain to the players what your thought process is. This room is not where we need to be from an experience standpoint. That does not mean that we don't think you can play. We just need more competition and we need more depth. Because, you know, even if you win it, you can have an injury like Miles Hinton last year, right?
Yeah.
And now we got to, or Zach Zinner last year, and now you got to switch things around. So.
Yeah, they kind of have a spot, like there's between Percy and Link, I think, is like the gap, right? And that's, I would go into the season this way. It was just hard to gauge Percy because you see him in there at guard, and like the first play he gets beat by attack, and you're like, oh, well, it's Mason Graham. It's going to happen to anybody. So right. I couldn't get any really gauge off of him. I think Evan Link looks like he's going to be a dude. He's huge. He got down on Jason Barham. Like he has a lot of athleticism. So I mean, he still needs to learn how to play. But that, you know, that's a redshirt freshman, and he kind of flashed. So I think the future looks pretty nice there. I would love it if Gentry has a good fall and just kind of settles into that position, because when he moves people, oh my God, they move.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, okay, go ahead, Craig.
Just one thought is that I'm glad you mentioned Link, because I haven't looked at him yet, and that was next on my checklist. But what I did notice live was that, yeah, he did some stuff. So that he has, I think, a future in the program. That was my initial impression.
So let's go to the other side of the ball. Brian, defense, what stood out to you on that side of the ball?
I think you got some pretty decent linebacker play. It was difficult to, you know, tell much about the pass rush because there was a lot of guys getting in unblocked, which just has something that happens in the spring. But I got to ask, why are there blitzes in this defense?
Well, that's a great question.
You're looking at Josiah Stewart, Derek Moore, Kenneth Grant, Mason Graham. Why are we blitzing at all? Stop it. Cut it out. What are we doing? I'm joking. Because Will Howard is a little bit quarterback, and only now we can blitz. Because like it's going to be a Chip Kelly offense. It's not really going to be the Ohio State offense of yore, where they downgraded from Kyle McCord to Will Howard in terms of passing accuracy. So I think you can get after a little bit more this year. But it was that's something that did pop out to me.
Yeah,
is that the constant too high stuff where we're just not going to bring our second safety into the box is apparently a thing of the past. At least it was in the spring game. That's in terms of the feel of the defense that that's what leapt out. And then I thought you got good play from the linebackers. I thought Ernest Hausman showed well. I thought Jimmy Rolder showed well. So that was going to be a major, you know, question mark, because you get two guys who are going to the draft in the next couple of days leaving, and you need to fill those spots. And then, you know, I thought TJ Guy was someone who flashed, and he flashed the last couple of years in very limited snaps, but you can – there's no shame in being behind last year's two deep at defensive end. So I think in terms of depth at defensive end, Michigan has it. I would like to see them pick up that Kent State kid in the portal at defensive tackle, because – you know, they rotated through five guys last year. I think you have a solid three this year with Rayshon Betty, but he wasn't available in the spring, and you need a fourth guy to keep it up. And I didn't see that from any of the guys on the field going into the fall. Like, obviously, defensive tackle is a spot where you develop over a period of time, mostly, unless you're Mason Graham or Kenneth Grant. So I'm not writing any of those guys off, but in terms of this fall, I would like to see a rotational defensive tackle picked up.
Yeah, I mean, the second string at defensive tackle was injured. So Benny was out, and so was Trey Pierce. And I think that's why, there's going to be a big gap from Mason Graham and Kenneth Grant to anybody. But you also, their backups were just not playing. I hope that they're both, you know, back in fall, and I think that's the plan, that both will be healed in time for that. But, you know, Ika One is just a guy. He's just sitting in there. And then after that, they were moving defensive ends and walk-ons over. Like, I watched one guy a couple times, and I'm like, oh, this guy's playing hard. Who is that? It's Joey Klunder. So, like, that's where we're at right now as far as depth. And, you know, they're throwing Eno Etta there at nose tackle, and that guy's a defensive end. So, like, it was impossible to really gauge them, and then it was impossible to gauge the interior of the line as well because of that. I really wish we'd seen something from, like, Alessandro Lorenzetti, who I think is the last guy who is a scholarship player on the defensive line, or at least, like, get one of these freshmen to – we got four freshman tackles, and none of them were here for spring. Like,
what about Brandt? Wasn't there a kid named Brandt?
Cam Brandt's an edge that they were playing in that, like, Jenkins inside, role. Okay. He played pretty well. He was also a guy who got taken for a ride by the tackle. I don't know why I'm blanking on his name all of a sudden. I was mentioning him earlier. 75.
Gentry.
Yeah, he got taken for a ride by Gentry. But, I mean, Brandt is not going to be a tackle. He's going to be a heavy edge. So neither is Etta, but like that's what they had to play with this game because they don't have their guys. The guy I did flash a little bit, it's probably a year out, but Chibi Amuna, he's that walk-on with a story that they got out of Southfield. He was supposed to come in with like a whole lot of talent, and they just had to put some weight on him and turn him into something. It looks like they're going to turn him into kind of a 3-tech, 5-tech kind of guy, and he's got some moves. He's got he's coming along. So I think you might see something out of him. Maybe but he's probably more of a next year thing. I agree that we at least need a tackle to get us to next year.
Yeah, I think they get to Brian's point about CJ West. I think they leave for CJ West. You get Rayshon Benny back. That'd be a nice mix in there. I like what we saw from TJ. You got to keep it in perspective though, because he really really flashed in a big way in that game. And then you look at he's going against Frazier and Tony Elliott on a couple of those of those plays. And so, but he did what you should do against young, inexperienced guys. He absolutely just made them look like they were young players.
I mean, so, Sam, it's the spring game.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that as a criticism. I'm saying that as a, you can't, I saw something as, oh, TJ Guy is going to be you know, he's about to break out in a big way. I think he's going to have a good year. I don't think that you could look at the spring game and say, yeah, he is. He's definitely going to be dominant this season. I think it shows that he's ready to take a step to be in the rotation, and maybe he will be that next guy. But certainly I like where he fits in the rotation. I thought Zeke Berry showed well in the game. I thought that DJ Waller and especially Jahir Hill, I thought they had some good snaps in the game. And of course, DJ Waller jumps in the portal, already seeing reports about Kentucky being heavily in the mix.
I think we saw those reports before he jumped in the portal, Sam.
Yeah, yeah. I don't see any coincidence there. Right. But that's, you know, that's the game these days, you know, tampering, legal or otherwise, is the way of the world. So you have to adapt. And if you are in a position where, you know, the poaching attempts are sort of pushing you from an NIL perspective, you got some decisions to make. Yeah. You know, do you bend to every demand? Because if you do that, then it winds up, you know, having an effect on the guys that are already on your roster who say, okay, well, if he can do that, then I could go back to the table and be like, hey, you know what? I need X, Y, Z. So you gotta have a line. And if that line is going to compromise you, then you got to be ready to move on. But that doesn't mean, I mean, it's still, what, 5 more days in the period? You got to keep guarding your yard so other poaching attempts aren't successful. Meanwhile, remember we had this whole segment? You remember I said, what is it, time to tamper? I don't think that Michigan is in virgin territory when it comes to legally being able to reach out and ascertain what might be coming up in the portal. I'm of the mind that it should be on a whole different. If it's me, I'm looking at every roster, every good team in the country. Even, I guess you might, even bad teams are going to have some good players. And I'm saying, who on this squad, who do I want? That's a freshman, a sophomore, or a fifth year guy. Who do I want? And then I figure out a way to find out if they're interested in getting into the portal. And you can do that legally. That's how you play the game right now.
Don't they have to be make this attempt in the corner position at the
Absolutely.
Least? Because they're really thin. I mean, yeah, the kid from Kent State West would be great. But really, even more than that, they need a corner, especially if Waller's going to go. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've got to find someone at that spot.
Yeah, I mean, even with DJ in the fold, they still had to find. Like, yeah. I've been saying, they got to go get another corner. Like, you got your experience is mostly what Johnson and a few snaps for DJ Waller, right? And of course, you can mix Jay McBurrows in there, who had a few plays, but that's not, you're not feeling very comfortable from an experience standpoint. You got Texas. I mean, you got all these teams coming in there going to throw it around the yard. Hey, and there's no warm up to Texas. You got, I mean, they're on you right now. You don't have 4 games to get ready for that. So if you can go get you some experience to fortify those ranks, you do it. And so I was, even before DJ Waller, now especially, now I'm thinking you got to try to find 2. And there aren't 2 in the portal right now, which is why I say, hey, man, look at all these rosters. Find who you're interested in. Find a way to figure out if they would be interested in joining the national champion, defending national championship defense.
Yeah,
and a Michigan degree, but the you know, this is we're in a weird time right now because there's no contract, so mm-hmm. you can, you know, Kentucky can come along and offer whatever number is ridiculous nowadays, and you know, maybe not even pay it, because like once the guy's on your roster, you know, now he's there, and I, you know, there's a lot of lies out there, and there's also lies about whether people are paying. There's some BS going around about how Ohio State didn't pay one of their guys, and like I think that was directly refuted by the guy who was they're talking about. So I mean, you can't believe most of the stuff that's going around out there, but this is what the world is right now, and mm-hmm. if you are building a team. Michigan has that cachet. You know, we're the national champions, and Michigan is hated by a lot by everybody, right? So if you grab a guy from Michigan, like, you know, even if Keon Sabb goes to Alabama and doesn't start, they still got a big win over the offseason just by taking a guy with the name Michigan after him. And that's Alabama, right? So Kentucky, you know, they're Kentucky. They're did they get a guy off of Michigan's roster and they can say, oh, it looks like he wanted to come here? You know, it doesn't matter if you paid the guy or not. It doesn't matter if the guy plays or not. It doesn't matter what the guy's future is. And that's where I really have a problem, is that what future does anybody have? If this is the system we have, right, where you just kind of have to go and ask, and this, what are we doing for – why are we forcing guys into this system where you have to, like, you know – go to your coaches and ask every year for some money, and or go to the portal and hope that somebody's actually going to pay you what they promise you, because you can't sign a contract to make that either. It's just such a stupid system. And I know we've been on this a whole bunch, but yeah, like this is what's got to get fixed. And I think the school's got to be sick of this by now.
Yeah, they are. Unfortunately, it's not going to get fixed overnight.
Right.
So you got to deal with the system as it is. Tamper. Tamper more than you're tampering right now, because, you know, you get a few pieces and now you're right back in contention again. I mean, even with what they have, they're a contending team, but you're shoring up some places that need to be shored up if you can get some guys to jump in the portal. And I'm going to do that until the rules change. That'll be my perspective. And again, I don't want to make it sound like Michigan isn't, you know, Michigan is behind the times in terms of kind of working the angles that you have to, the legal angles that you have to work. I believe Michigan is doing what everyone else is doing in that regard. But I'm saying take it to another level. I'm saying I'm not just looking at, you know, players I might have connections with. Whoever it is that I might like from some roster, I'm getting in contact some legal way.
What are you afraid of? They're going to hate you more?
Yeah, so... you know, we shall see. We shall see. There's a lot to tackle, though, because Dusty May is, he's an animal, man. If nothing else, if you say we got to wait for the results, and we'll get to this on the other side, we got to wait for the results of how they're actually going to perform on the court. If nothing else, you can say this dude is an animal when it comes to his work ethic. He's an animal when it comes to his fundraising efforts, right? I mean, we are seeing more donor support for basketball than we've seen. And sometimes, am I saying this where it totally where it needs to be? No, but I'm saying he has definitely hustled up some support, the kind of support necessary to help you rebuild a roster. We will get to that on the other side. Get your takes on these players that they've added. We'll return here. MGo Blog Roundtable, Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, The Ticket.
Well,
what do you tamper with? What do you tamper with? You think, Jeff, you think that Michigan is out here not paying their players, the collectives? Man, I was outspoken before the national championship saying, hey, man, they got to step up to the game. This is, they're playing a different game than everyone else. Since the national championship, Michigan's guys are well taken care of. Well taken care of. The collectives have stepped up. But just because your collective stepped up doesn't mean that every number that every guy wants, you're going to pay, right? So if everyone gets everything that they want, there's just no way you can sustain a roster like that.
Well, I mean, let's say hypothetically, Waller says, hey, I got to have 300,000. Now, let's just say hypothetically. And if Waller's getting 300,000, a guy who may not even be your starting corner, what does that do to the rest of your roster? I mean, all of a sudden, you know, it's not feet, at least by my instincts, it's completely, I mean, not feet.
You think Kentucky is, do you think he's worth $300,000 to Kentucky? I don't know what their cornerback situation, you know, is right now. Maybe they've just got a giant hole next to the, at number two cornerback, and, you know, that's going to be the difference between just getting shredded in the SEC this year and having a guy. Or maybe they look at that guy and they're like, this dude's an All-American. This guy's going to go in the first round. You don't know. And when you're talking about a job market, you know, you are worth what someone's willing to pay you. The thing is, if you don't have contracts, there is no real value there. That was the point I was trying to make, is that, like, he can go to Kentucky. They could offer $300,000, but they might not have to pay him $300,000.
And here's the thing. I mean, you know, you can see, feel, and touch what you're going to get at Michigan. There's proof. And you know what kind of defense that you're on. And you know that if you're not starting, you're playing a whole hell of a lot on that great defense. And so, you know, at some point, you know, from a business standpoint, is it the short money or the long money that you're chasing? Long money says for a corner at Michigan, you got to go to another place. You got to learn the defense, whatever. You got to look at their depth chart and see how likely is it that you beat someone out at that spot, because you're right there on a championship level defense, and the money is tangible. You can see exactly what guys, there's no guesswork with exactly what you're going to get. To me, that's a lot. That's risk. And I'm not saying that guys shouldn't take it, but I would be very, very reluctant. I'd be very, very reluctant given what we've heard about, like what you said, Seth. It's not like every guy's getting cheated, not getting what he's promised. Mm-hmm. But there's enough of them out there for me to be nervous about leaving a surefire thing in a great situation at Michigan.
I mean, you just have to be reasonable about what you're chasing. You know, everyone who's been in the job market knows the difference between promise and a contract. But I'm saying, if you don't have contracts, the teams themselves are the ones who really should be the ones pushing for this, right? Because
the players have all the leverage
right now.
I think that you're right. The pendulum has swung too far in that direction where there's too much leverage for players. But I come back to what I said before. This is what you got to deal with right now. You know, down the line, you're right. Let's change the rules. But these are the rules right now for this team. And this team wants to go back to competing for a championship. You need to get guys from other squads to do that, to shore up this roster. So,
back on radio in about 10 seconds, guys. Stand by.
I will concede that I have extreme bias as far as Dusty May is concerned. All right? Wear it on my sleeve. Am I getting too far ahead of myself and over my skis, Brian Cook, being excited about what he's putting together in the transfer portal?
What? No, of course not. Like, let's just look at it piece by piece. You have Trey Donaldson, who was a 20-minute-per-game player on the number four team in KenPom, who outperformed Aiden Holloway, who's the big recruit, who was getting playing time largely because he was a big recruit by the end of that year, because he was not shooting well, and that's what he's supposed to be doing. You have Roddy Gale, who'd be in the first round of the NBA draft if he shot 35% from three last year. And he had a wrist injury. Yeah. This guy has rim pressure. He gets to the line. He's 6'4". He's athletic, a former top 50 recruit, entering his third year of college. Like, everything you want. You have Reuben Jones, who you got to look at a little bit deeper at the numbers to figure out Reuben Jones. But that guy is a straight up elite defender. Straight up elite. Like,
who can North shoot. Tech,
who can shoot. Yeah. And his 2-point numbers look ugly last year, but he was their point guard. And he's not going to be the point guard at Michigan. Now, Dusty May generally does not have like one guy who is the point guard. So all three of these guys were the primary creators for their teams when they were on the floor last year. That led to elevated turnover rates for all of them, lesser efficiency. As they spread that burden out, their efficiency will go up. You have a 1-2 punch at center, assuming Vlad Golden comes. That is going to be the equivalent of Mo Wagner and John Teske. Like, you know, I don't think Wolf is as good as Wagner, but I think that Golden will be better than Teske was when he was a junior. You have a really skilled guy. You have a back-to-the-basket guy. You have the ability to take a couple of early fouls on your starting center and be like, ah, it's fine. And then at the four, you pick up a guy who is a 6'10" guy who profiles as an elite spot-up shooter. And the thing about a spot-up shooter at 6'10" is it doesn't matter if they're contesting your shot. Your shot basically cannot be contested. Now, there are some questions about the defensive abilities of the two guys who are currently slotted in at the four. But to me, this looks like a team that has multiple playmakers, multiple ball handlers, has a couple of snipers so that you can't collapse. Everybody on this team except Gale and Golden can shoot. And Gale had a wrist injury last year. So I think it's possible, maybe even probable, that he ticks up to 35% from three. And then you can't collapse off anybody. You have Vlad Golden, who was the best back-to-the-back center in college basketball last year, 1.2 points per possession on post-ups, which is nutty. And you have depth. You brought in Pippen and Kayson at the guard spots. You kept Brooks. You have probably Namari Burnett, who I think is going to feel like a much, much better player now that there are three other guys on the team who can be primary ball handlers, he's a small forward. He's always been a small forward. And now he slots into that spot really nicely. So to me, you've got eight guys already, and you're going to look for a ninth guy. Maybe it's Pippen. Maybe it's Kayson. Maybe it's Daryl Brooks, who can come in and just, you know, give you 5-10 minutes a game. But that's what we're talking about right now. We're talking about the ninth guy. Who's the guy that Craig Ross wishes didn't play?
Yeah, I mean, mostly that's true. Yeah.
So to go from this roster as Will Cheddar maybe to this over the course of 2 weeks, like the only thing that gives me pause here is the fact that, you know, a bunch of teams last year brought in a bunch of transfers and none of them were very good. You know, NC State's the big story there, but NC State was 17-14 before they went through that miracle run in the ACC tournament. And if they don't get a buzzer beater against Virginia to go to overtime, like, they're just, you know, another mediocre team that hits the NIT. So that's the one thing that, like, you know, kind of slows me down, mm-hmm. is that it's possible that this team, which is mostly made up of transfers going into this year, is going to be less than the sum of its parts. But if you just look at the sum of its parts, Bart Torvik has an algorithm that projects, you know, your roster to next year's rankings. And if they pick up Vlad Goldin, he's got them 22nd in the country. So that is just an algorithm. But, you know, as a baseline, I think that's maybe reasonable, like a fringe top 25 team. And to go from last year's roster to the exodus to this, I mean, I did not expect Michigan to pick up Roddy freaking Gale, right? Like, that was one of the better guards in the Big Ten last year. And he's a top 50 recruit. And I'm sure that everybody was coming after him with big piles of NIL money. And then they're not done, right? So it looks like they're looking for another guy who can play the three or the four. And they're looking at a couple of the Duke transfers and then Peja Stojakovic's kid from Stanford. And maybe there's a couple other guys out there that they're still interested in. So, I mean, and the other thing about this roster is it's both old, it's experienced, and it's also not just a one and done next year we're starting over roster.
Right.
You have Jones and you have Golden who will be one and dones, but everybody else can come back next year. And they picked up a couple of freshmen who that May believes in over the long term. You know, Walters is coming off a freshman year at Bama. Like, this is, it looks like a roster that May's been here for 5 years and this is his roster.
Yeah, it looks coherent, right?
It is coherent. I mean, Brian's synthesis was beautiful. I mean, and a couple of footnotes to it is, one is Roddy Gale, even though he had a bad year from three, and like Brian said, he had a wrist injury, his freshman year, he was 43% from three. Mm-hmm. You know, so there is some history there of him being able to shoot from range, and he is an 83% free throw shooter. He's a really, really nice player. My other footnote on this is that Walters was a freshman who's very, very thin. And I expect to see some progression with him as he gets a year in the weight room. And as he gets older, he can definitely shoot the ball. The question there is, you know, can he play defense? And the other thing I have to add is I did spend some time looking at Justin Pippen, and he's a freshman. You're not going to expect a lot out of him this year, but he's an NBA potential guy. I mean, his game is phenomenal. And from what I saw him play against a team of college guys. I mean, guys who will play in college. It was a high school game. And he did everything. He was excellent from three. He took it to the hole. He had a good handle. Sees the court really well. And the thing that was remarkable to me was how quick he squares up. If you've seen, Michigan had players this year who could shoot the three, but they were very, very slow at squaring up. So the three often you know, often wasn't a great look. Pippen can square his shoulders very quickly.
Yeah, he mirrors his brother. His trajectory is a lot like his brother. And that was one of the things that we talked to Mike Boynton yesterday. He said, we're going to have some guys like that that develop over the course of their high school careers. They aren't necessarily the big timer as a freshman, mm-hmm. maybe even a sophomore, but man, they just steadily get better year after year. And that even happened during his senior campaign. So, high upside guy. And if you look at the pedigree, hell, his dad was like that too.
Yeah. Right? His dad was, I think, the team manager at Central Arkansas or something his freshman year. And
Pippen grew like from 6'1 to 6'8 in college, I think.
Yeah.
And like his dad, Scotty. And Justin is a guy who shot up with the rankings in part because he, you know, got up to 6'3 this year after being a couple inches shorter.
Yeah.
So he's a guy who's, you know, I mean, it's a perfect match, right? Dusty May wants to get a guy who's in high school and develop him over the course of his career. And he has like the latest of the late bloomer family coming in, right? Like,
right. Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, like I've watched some of Lorenzo Cason and I don't know how that guy's an unranked 3-star. Like, he's efficient. He can shoot. He's got a nasty crossover dribble. Mm-hmm. He's like smart about passing lanes. Like, he's a true point guard. And like, I think it's telling that, you know, the other team he visited was Florida, like an SEC school. Like, and they would have taken him. They were excited if they could get him. But, you know, that's, like, you see some people on the message boards complaining. It's like, this guy, he's just this unranked 3-star. I'm like, yeah, so is Janelle Davis. Have we not learned our lesson? Like, are you going to get mad at John Beilein for taking Caris LeVert? Like, come on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, if you look at the guys, look at the roster they brought in. We talked about NC State, we talked about St. John's as two teams last year who brought in a lot of transfers. Both those teams, they brought in one guy who created 65% or more of his own points. This team, Trey Donaldson, Roddy Gale, Reuben Jones, all of those guys were point guards for their teams. And then all of those guys are also 6'3", 6'4", 6'5". So we're not talking about, like, you know, little point guards. We're talking about guys who should be able to defend as well. And you look at Sam Walters, he shot better when he was guarded than uncontested. So, like, even though, like, they count a lot of, when you flip it out to a guy who's 6'10 and he shoots and somebody's running, that contested, uncontested thing kind of becomes a fuzzy border. But that guy also can pass. And so can Danny Wolf. So I think that we're going to need a lot of patience with this team because a lot of them are creators and a lot of them like to go and find their dudes and know where to, and put the, they're really good at putting the ball where a guy should be going, but it's going to take a little while for all these guys to kind of figure out where they should be going because a lot of them have been alphas. I don't think they have had a lot of opportunities except for Vlad Golden a little bit to be the one somebody's creating for.
No, I mean, I think there's a flip side to that too. Is that, you know, you go in to look at Reuben Jones's synergy stats and basically everything that he's doing inside the 3-point line is as a pick and roll ball handler.
Mm-hmm.
And Reuben Jones has a lot of assets as a player, but one thing he does not have is a pull-up game. So he was constantly going to the rim, probably against drop coverage since he doesn't have a pull-up game, and trying to finish over centers. And so that is why he shot 39% from two last year.
Right.
Now, what you want to see is you want to see Reuben Jones not being in the pick and roll. You want to see Reuben Jones being a secondary ball handler. So someone's already collapsed the defense. They kick it out to him. He can take a three or attack a closeout. And in that situation, I think his efficiency will go up because he is 6'5" and he should be a reasonably good finisher for a guard, which he was not last year. So I think downshifting some of these guys from, you know, the dude on the team who gets like 0% of his buckets are assisted to the dude on the team where 30, 40, 50% of his buckets are assisted is helpful for everybody's efficiency. And this is what, like, it's remarkable that Dusty May built a Dusty May team in 2 weeks,
mm-hmm.
right? Because last year he doesn't have like a guy with a 20 assist rate at FAU. He has like four guys with 15 to 18. And now Michigan is going to be starting, in all likelihood, three guys who were the point guard for their team last year. One of them happens to be an all-world defender, too. And I think Gale's probably a guy who can be a plus there as well. And Donaldson is a guy who is a three-star safety, too. Mm-hmm. So you know he's going to bring toughness. You know he's going to be a guy who's going to, you know, not back down to anyone. And, you know, the concerns on this team are like, I think that the four spot is going to be pretty weak defensively as it's constituted. And also, like, they need probably one more guy who can play there or at C, because they got four forwards on the team. You probably need another one. Yeah. But that's it. That's it.
I think people should be a little more excited about Trey Donaldson from the standpoint of what statement Dusty made with him. Because Aiden Holloway had all kind, like, that was teed up. That recruitment was teed up. So you can recruit them both. I mean, they both had interest in Michigan, but you couldn't take Trey Donaldson and think you could get Aiden Holloway. You couldn't take Aiden Holloway and think you get Trey Donaldson. The two guys clearly were looking to get away and didn't want to play together anymore, right? And he chose Trey. He chose the path of more resistance, because you don't have all those ties to Trey Donaldson like you do to Aiden Holloway. And he chose Trey Donaldson. That's not me. I'm not slighting Aiden in any way. I don't want to give that impression. I think he's a really, really good player. But who fits what Dusty wants to do better? I think that's what it boils down to. And you're getting a 40% three-point shooter versus a guy who, good player, going to be a good player. It's going to be interesting how it works out for Nate. But one who doesn't shoot nearly as well. So who fits better for what Dusty wants to do? It was Trey Donaldson. I think people should look at that one with a little less indifference. Well, and I've seen some people look at it with.
I mean, Trey Donaldson is a sturdy 6'3 guy. You're right. He was 50%, over 50% from two, over 41% from three, 78% from the free throw line, high assist rate, 151 assists and only 46 turnovers. So that ratio is almost 4-1, which is really, really good. I mean, the Michigan was almost 1-for-1 last year, by my recall. And so, yeah, he has the opportunity to be really good. The other thing I like about Reuben Jones is he's a super smart guy. And he's also the kind of guy who can be the oil in the, what I always call the grease in the system, that he doesn't necessarily have to be in charge or in control. And as Brian has said, I think he was the defensive player of the year in his conference. He plays defense. He does a lot of stuff, you know, and I actually kind of like him in the pick and roll game. And Wolf actually is a phenomenal pick and roll player. I watched some of his tape. He played with Israel in the European under 20 games. And I think they lost in the finals to France, but he was phenomenal in the pick and roll game. And Wolf is a guy, at least offensively, whose game is just jumping through the ceiling. In those games, I think he was 18 points, 12 rebounds, 2.5 assists, playing for the Israeli team. And he's a good player.
I was just going to say, let me be clear. I'm not saying that I'm looking at this team, because I see my brother from another mother, Daniel Horton, in the thing. He said, you need to calm down, Sam. I'm calm. I admit my bias. Yeah. But I'm not sitting here saying that I think what Dusty is saying about, we're trying to be a Final Four team. I love setting the bar high. I'm not sitting here on this round table saying I expect that to be the outcome.
No.
But I do expect for this to be a competitive team in this Big Ten. Yes, a totally new roster, but you look around, I mean, this wasn't a monster Big Ten last year, and you see a lot of turnover on these teams. So I see no reason to think that, based on what he's putting together, that this shouldn't be a relevant team in the race.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. He said, I mean, he's done what he said he was going to do, I think, which is we're going to have a team that competes right away.
Well, also, and, like, you got to look at the roles that all these guys had on their teams. Mm-hmm. So last year, Roddy Gale was the highest usage player on Ohio State. He was their alpha. Last year, Reuben Jones was the highest usage player on Texas, in the North Texas when he was in the game because he missed 11 games. He was their alpha. You know, with Vladislav Golden was basically neck and neck with Jonell Davis. He was their alpha or one of two that they had. Danny Wolf was the highest usage player on Yale. Like, these guys are all coming from a place where, with one or two limited exceptions, their tough shots, their bailout shots are going to be dialed back. You know, there's always that late clock guy, and that's going to be Gale. So, like, I'm not expecting that from Gale, but I do expect that the efficiency of the other guys on the court is going to pop up because they're not going to be as burdened as they were at their previous schools.
Oh, they all have some hidden skills too that Matt D has been kind of pulling out as he wrote, as he does these write ups. So Reuben Jones, 6'5", 190, he's actually really good at boxing out. And he had a couple of clips of him like taking a 6'9", 240 guy and just shoving him out of the lane to get a rebound or pick up a foul. Sam Walters is a really good passer. Danny Wolf is a fantastic passer. He's actually going to be a creator. Mm-hmm. Trey Donaldson has an incredible pull-up game. So, you know, if they want to drop coverage at the beginning of this to try to deal with Michigan's passing, like, boom, he's just going to put a shot up.
Well, the problem with that is that, yeah, but like more than half of his jumpers last year were off the dribble.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to, and that's something that is an aspect of what Florida Atlantic has done. But one thing that really jumped off the page is that when they take catch and shoot jumpers, they were like 98th percentile the last 2 years at having them be unguarded. So if you want open shots, open catch and shoot shots, this is your offense. So I'm hoping that Trey Donaldson is actually less of a pull-up guy, but it's nice to have that in your bag when, you know, it's late clock and you got to get something. So that's good for Donaldson. That's good for Gale. But what, you know, a guy like Walters is like, if he can get a little bit stronger, if he can be a good defender, this offense is going to be like candy for him because he's going to be the guy getting a lot of kickouts. And then it doesn't really matter for like what your contest is most of the time with him, because again, he is 6'2 and crazy long. Like when Seth said he was skinny earlier, that doesn't quite cover it. Like he was Caris LeVert skinny. He's under 200 pounds. He was 6'10. So his game last year was really good. When he was a catch and shoot guy, he was 100th percentile to synergy, and everything else was a total disaster. Now, that's fine, right? Because you have that one aspect of your game that you can lean on, and then you can develop. I mean, he was number 86 recruit his year. He wasn't a guy who was supposed to be a finished product. And now you get a guy who has that upside being developed by Dusty May, a guy who's turned a bunch of guys into very, very good college players. So, you know, I'm not predicting a Final Four or anything, but this looks like a team that should make the tournament and, like, not on the bubble.
Right. I mean, I agree. They've done one part of their job, or they've almost done one part of their job, which is they brought in a roster which should compete. Now the question is, as Seth pointed out right from the get-go, can you, or Brian, or both, can you put all these alpha dog guys together and have something that looks like synergy, something that looks like an actual basketball team? And that's a really hard thing to do, almost regardless. And here you've got guys coming together from all over the country who haven't played together, and you've got to somehow, you know, put a coherent whole together out of them. That's not easy. And obviously teams haven't been particularly successful in it in the past.
Well, one thing I would say is that Golden is obviously a guy who May has a ton of experience with. And the same goes with Reuben Jones, because Reuben Jones played 4 years in North Texas. Yeah. He played Florida Atlantic 8 times.
Yeah.
And Dusty May was like, I want that guy on my team. And I feel like he will be relatively seamless because defense travels. Mm-hmm. And his shooting will travel. He's not as great of a 3-point shooter as his last year stats suggest, but he is 36% on something like 250 career opportunities. So he's at least a solid shooter. And his overall offensive efficiency has been kind of up and down. So, but this is a roster where you can have him be a 15% usage guy. You know, he doesn't have to be a 25% usage guy like it was last year, because you're going to have Gale, you're going to have Golden. Those guys are probably going to be the guys who are taking the tough shots with a side of Donaldson. That guy can just be a 3-and-D wing. And if you're asking me, which guy profiles as the best 3 and D wing in the league, it's him. Because, you know, his on-off splits for North Texas are nutty. So North Texas was 10 points worse per 100 possessions on defense when he was out of the game.
And he gave Jonell Davis a hard time when he
played. Matt D put together some clips of him guarding Jonell Davis, and it's just this guy that's why he's at Michigan, is because Dusty Bay was watching this and he's like, I hate this guy.
I want him on my team.
I think we're gonna love him. I think Reuben Jones is gonna be a fan favorite.
Yeah, Reuben, we gotta get out of here, folks. Enjoy the draft. Let's see JJ how high he goes. I predicted number 3. The Vikings trading up to number 3 to get him. We'll see. We got to get out of here. We'll talk to you tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cupola station.